FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Financial Survival Network is brought to you today by Orin Resources, a junior exploration company with the appetite of a major. It's hot on the trail of the next globally significant discovery, creating enormous potential upside for you, the shareholder. Orin is one of the most aggressive exploration companies pursuing high-grade, scalable gold and copper deposits and has a premier seven-project portfolio, including its two flagships, Committee Bay in the Arctic and Sombrero in Peru. Orin's unparalleled technical team and highly experienced management has a history of success in advancing and monetizing exploration assets. No wonder Orin's been called one of the best in the junior exploration sector. Orin trades on the TSX and the NYSE under AUG. To learn more, go to orinresources.com. That's AURYNResources.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 3:29. The Fed's meeting, and you know what that means. The price of gold is destined to go down, at least temporarily. It's trading just under $1,300, down $650 so far. Let's see how long it takes to turn around this time. We know it's going to happen. You've been watching it and watching it. Will this time really be any different? I wouldn't worry about it too much. Well, as always, if you got a different opinion or you think we're missing out on something, please write us the email address, kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, someone who can shed light, perspective, and sanity upon the metals markets and other markets as well. I'm talking about Craig Hemke, aka Turd Ferguson. TFMetalsReport.com is where you find him. Go over there, sign up for Craig's newsletter. It's must reading, and listen to his podcast too. Craig, welcome back. And so the Fed is in town, right? They're going to probably do nothing, but in that case, what better to show that you're really serious about controlling inflation than to knock down gold, right?
Yeah, this isn't anything unusual, Kerry. This is how the banks manage the price of gold, and they've been doing it now for decades. And anybody that follows these markets closely should not be surprised on a day where there's an FOMC meeting that's concluding, or on a day where the Fed chairman is up on Capitol Hill for a Humphrey Hawkins testimony, or even sometimes when everybody's focused on an employment report. Mm-hmm. Price usually gets right up to a certain level and then held there. In the hopes that, you know, you'll violate some technical moving averages on the way down, that kind of thing, flush out the specs. What's different this time is that has already occurred. And so when we talk about where price is going from here, just to lay the groundwork for everybody listening, we had a pretty good idea that price was going to get smashed back from 1350 a month ago, because 1350 to 1360 is a real line in the sand. And I don't say that, you know, just metaphorically and lightly. Anybody can look at a chart and see that it has been nearly 5 years since gold has closed above 1360 on a weekly basis. And there's a bunch of intra-week highs that all connect in a trend line. Any move above 1360 would signify a major breakout. So when we got to 1350 or so a month ago, with technical measures showing a pretty extreme overbought, you knew that we were going to get flushed out. And that's exactly what happened. Took price all the way down to 1285, where I began telling my subscribers that's where support should be. That's exactly where we bottomed. 2 weeks ago, we started talking about then a gradual, slow rally into today that would take price right up to the 50-day moving average, which is 1308. We've been over that level twice in the past 2 days. We even got there once last week. Every time we got there, we immediately got slammed backward like we did again earlier today. We were at 1309 just a couple hours ago here on Wednesday morning. Mm. And now we're back to 1300. This is just all part of price management. I have no doubt what's going to happen later today. The Fed is not going to be hiking the Fed funds rate. To do so would invert the yield curve all the way out to 10 years. So that ain't going to happen. You're going to get a lot of talk and bluster and vague descriptions from Chairman Powell. Mm-hmm. But in the end, this economy is moving toward recession. The Fed is moving toward a reversal and rate cuts and even more QE to try to pump liquidity into the economy to keep it afloat like they've been doing now for nearly a decade. And gold and silver are going to respond favorably as we go through the year. It's never straight up. People know that. But it's going to continue to be this three steps forward, two steps back until we do finally break out above 1360. And then we'll start seeing a more enthusiastic rush of momentum into gold and silver.
Hmm. Interesting. So the more things change, in other words, the more they stay the same, the Fed just rearranges the players in the game, right?
Well, kind of. Yeah. You know, here's the difference of this time, Kerry. You know, they've been really since about 2013 or 14, they've been playing this or maintaining, let's put it that way, maintaining a charade that everything's under control, you know, that this was all part of their master plan, you know, that they would do some QE, you know, of trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars worth of QE. But then at some point, the economy would be strong enough that rates would go back to normal, whatever that is, and that their balance sheet would be reduced back to normal, whatever that is. And everybody bought it. I mean, you and I didn't buy it. But the 99.9% of the money managers and high net worth people and hedge funds and all that kind of stuff, they all bought it. And so they've maintained the charade really almost into late last year. I mean, even by November of last year, Goldman Sachs was still out there saying three or four more rate hikes this year. And they're like, what? I mean, that just wasn't going to happen. I mean, you can look at the 30-year long bond carry, the longest, farthest point out on the yield curve. At 3%, that's exactly where it was for a yield that we had in December of 2015. Now, December 2015 is where Janet Yellen first started hiking rates. We went from basically zero to 25 basis points. We're now at 225 basis points, 2.25% to 2.5% is the Fed funds rate. It's been hiked 9 times. And yet the long bond rate hasn't moved at all. Everybody was talking about, oh, you're going to, you know, burst the bond bubble and all this nonsense. All these trillions and trillions of euro, yen, and dollars keeps continually flowing around the planet seeking for a home. That's why rates are never going to go to 6% or whatever garbage that, you know, that people put out there. And it's also why, because the long end hasn't moved up, that the Fed can't raise rates any further. And with the economy slowing, the discussion is going to turn to cuts. And when that happens, Kerry, we are right back into a situation like 2010, where the Fed had convinced the world that the one time they did QE in 09 was a one-off. It was the only time they're going to have to do it. There were green shoots everywhere. The economy was soaring back from the financial crisis. But by November 2010, they had to start QE2. Everybody went, wait a second, you really don't know what you're doing. Yeah. The dollar fell, the precious metal soared. And that's where we're headed now. People are going to look by later this year and go, wait a second, there's no normalization. This is normal now. And that then will, that loss of confidence in the Fed and everything else is what will trickle through into a eventual rush, like I said, of momentum into gold and silver in all their forms.
Mm-hmm. And so they must know deep in their heart of hearts that this is all futility. Are they thinking that something is going to happen to take them off the hook? Or do they just... Is it just kicking the can down the road as far as they can?
I think they're just kicking it, Kerry. I don't think the Fed gives a damn about anything other than their banks, first and foremost. The banks that they serve, mm-hmm. the banks that own them, their needs and desires are primary issue number one. And the banks are now tied to the stock market, just as state pension funds are tied to the stock market, just like everybody's retirement account is tied to the stock market. And so primary goal number one for the Fed is to keep the stock market afloat, which is why it's gone at a 45-degree angle, you know, for the last 10 years. And any minor correction, you get the plunge protection team called in on Christmas Eve, right?
Yeah.
So the Fed is going to do anything they can. And you're already seeing this with the ECB. The ECB tried to play this game about, now we're going to start to, you know, normalize our balance sheet and raise rates and all that crap. But they've already raised the white flag 2 weeks ago, and they're restarting QE. The Japanese have never even get rid of the illusion of trying to stop what they do. And the Fed's going to go that way too, if anything, because the U.S. stock market valuation is greater than the entire U.S. economic output at this point. And if the stock market were allowed to correct and fall by 25 or, you know, 50% like it did in 2001 and in 2008, oh my gosh, I mean, all hell would break loose. And so I think everything else be damned. Their credibility, their whatever. I don't think anybody even cares about that. You watch CNBC or Bloomberg, they don't give a damn about the Fed's credibility. As long as the stock market's going up, everything's fine. And that's what the Fed's going to try to do. Damn the torpedoes.
So just keep it going and don't worry about anything else, huh?
Right, right. And again, like I said, the key here then is the loss of confidence. That's exactly what we saw in 2010, late 2010. You know, the curtain was pulled back and everybody saw that Bernanke was just this little man behind the curtain pulling the levers like the Wizard of Oz, right? Mm. And that caused a dollar to puke. And that's when gold then went from, it began 2010 at 1040. And by September of 2011, it was 1920. You know, it was late in 2010. Silver had gone sideways for the majority of the year, but it was in late 2010 that it began to move up from 18 to 48. Mm-hmm. And it was that loss of confidence that sparked it. And now, and again, that's where we're headed. Then you throw on the political stuff, Kerry. Right now, we're already up against this, you know, this illusionary debt ceiling nonsense, but we're all up against it. And the government is, you know, they're trying to, Mnuchin's out there moving money around to try to keep the government afloat. But this has to be negotiated sometime in about the next 60 days or, you know, we'll be talking about default and all that stuff. You think Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, after what happened, you know, with the shutdown and basically winning that fight a month ago, do you think they're going to be willing to deal with Trump? Or are they going to lay him, you know, on the cross of a mini default? I mean, they would love to do that, right? And they're not going to give any political victory. So this is coming later on, you know, in the next 30 or 60 days, too. All of this stuff, this uncertainty, political uncertainty, all that stuff creates an environment where, yeah, people want physical gold. But more importantly, people want gold in all of its forms. You know, the derivatives of the futures contracts, the GLD, the mining shares, all that kind of stuff. And once you get the key level to watch is that 1360, that's going to indicate a breakout to really anybody. I mean, you don't have to have a degree in technical analysis to see that. And then that's when I think things start to get pretty interesting.
Yeah. So we're just putting off the inevitable effectively, right?
Yeah, I suppose from a monetary standpoint, that's what they're trying to do. Yeah. And hey, they've been pretty good at it, right? No one's called them the carpet. You know, there's video out. I mean, people can go back and look. You know, Bernanke is testifying in one of those Humphrey Hawkins testimony. And I think it was Ron Paul that asked him about the QE and where it went. And it was like, did it go to foreign banks? And he just goes, yeah. Trillions of dollars. Do you have any record of this? No. None that you can see.
Nothing to see here. Move along.
Right. None that we're going to show you. And so again, as long as the stock market, there's too many media interests and too many public interests that have an interest in having the stock market go up. So nobody's going to stop and question it. It's like the stock market keeps going and they keep saying, well, yes, you know, this is really well. If the reason, the primary driver of the stock market going higher is all these buybacks that these corporations are using their own cash to buy back their shares. Here's the thing. If you buy back the shares and take them out of the general float and remove them from the amount of shares that are out there for people to buy, then if demand stays the same but supply is down, price goes up. Not only that, when we talk about PE ratios, we're talking about price of the stock versus earnings. Well, what are earnings? Earnings are a fraction, earnings per share. Mm. And so if you remove shares, your earnings per share go up too.
Of course.
And so that's, oh, look at how fundamentally strong this is. S&P earnings are up. I saw a thing last week said that S&P earnings are up 300% in the last decade. But somebody did all the math and took out all of the major share buybacks. Actual earnings are only up 30%.
Which still isn't bad, but it's not 300.
Over a decade.
It's a tenth.
Not, I mean, that's 1% a year, 2% a year. But what people find out are up 300%. Well, why is that? In large part, it's because all these corporations taking shareholder money, and rather than distributing it back to the shareholders or putting into R&D or hiring more employees and building more plants, they just simply buy back their own stock. Mm. So again, nobody calls anybody to the carpet on this because, look at the stock market's going up. Mm-hmm. And too many people have a vested interest in seeing that continue.
Yeah, it's effectively just financial alchemy. The operations of the company are really not strengthening. They're staying even when you factor in the stated rate of inflation, right? And then when you look at all the debt the companies have taken on, look, IBM's a perfect example. It's had virtually no top line growth for a decade, but their per share earnings have been through the roof because they bought back so many shares. But the fact of the matter is their performance has been subpar at best, but it's disguised because, you know, once upon a time you looked at total company earnings and then you looked at earnings per share, but they've dispensed with that nicety. And now it's just how many bucks a share did we make? And that just doesn't work. I mean, it's just untrue.
Yeah. Or you just look at revenue. You know, you look at these companies that don't even have earnings. You know, look at the long list of companies on the NASDAQ that don't earn money at all, but they have revenue. And so, you know, what's the revenue per share? Well, wait a second. What does that matter? If you're not making money, you're going out of business.
You're turning over dollars. If you're breaking even, you're just turning over dollars. And eventually you will collapse because you have to. You have to make money and your earnings need to keep going up, or at least at some kind of sustainable rate. They don't have to go up astronomically. All they got to do is go up 5% a year and your company's going to do pretty well, unless there's other competitors that are growing at three times the rate. But even then, you're going to do better. Craig, what about the sorry state of municipal finance? I know you've seen the article. Yeah. Of the 75 largest cities in the United States, 63 of them are basically bust.
Yeah.
When is that going to come home to roost? Plus, we've got states that are ready to hit the crapper, as it were.
Right. And a large part of that, Kerry, too. I don't want to blame it on the entire situation on this, but a large part of both city and state problems are the retirement plans, the defined benefit retirement plans, the pension plans that were been negotiated by the public employee unions and everything else. And the states have offered these, you know, plans to the employees, and the state governments and local governments all grow like crazy. And then the plans get underfunded, and then the assets in the plan don't grow fast enough. And then they become just kind of like a Ponzi scheme, like Social Security.
Yeah.
Where they're taking current inputs into the plan from current state employees and using that to pay out benefits to current retirees.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing doesn't work.
Sounds
but again,
good.
This is all part of what, I mean, the Fed knows this. I mean, as much as we ridicule them and understand, you know, what their motives are, I mean, it's not like they're just a bunch of dopes sitting around all day watching ESPN and flipping cards into a hat. I mean, they know what's going on.
You sure?
And so they see this and they realize, I mean, these state pension plans are already trying to project, you know, 7% growth into their, you know, their growth models to make them look like they're sustainable and that they're going to work into the future. Well, you can't get 7% when, you know, the Fed has already driven interest rates down to 2.
Yeah, well, here's an idea for them. If they need a higher return, they should all just go into the payday lending business because they can make a couple 100% on their money. And so what if the employee, you know, they just need to loan it to the employees who are broke instead of using the credit unions, which charge a reasonable rate of interest lower than commercial banks. Let's just put them all on payday loans.
Right. Hey, states are already running lotteries. They're all rushing to legalize marijuana and sports betting. Yeah. Why the hell not run the state-run pawn shop on top of it? I mean,
I like it.
Yeah,
I like it. And they do have one effectively. It's called the Rules of Escheatment. And if you your safe deposit box or your bank account go dormant in New York, it's like 18 months. But in other states, it's like 3 years. If you don't cash a dividend check, the state of California will just grab your shares and sell them off. And they did it to a guy who had a large Intel holding. And they didn't properly notify him, and the scheme was ruled unconstitutional by a federal judge as just a straight out and out taking, which it is.
Yeah. It's also called eminent domain, right? Yeah.
Well, it's effectively,
all those things are out there.
It goes back to the king's prerogative, where basically people didn't have personal property fortunes back in the Middle Ages. You owned, if you were lucky, you owned a plot of land, but if you died, or you abandoned that plot and didn't do anything with it, then escheated back to the king, who could then sell it off. And what a great scam. I mean, you could keep selling the same thing over and over again if you got dumb buyers who you don't protect yourselves from the state. And we think this is a wonderful policy, and we should be encouraging it in the country, and it happens at state and federal level too. There are federal escheatments that nobody even knows about. So the government's become a whole kleptocracy just to steal enough money to keep the whole thing afloat. What about the debt jubilee here? I know it would destroy all the banks and be done with them, but isn't this about the only alternative that we really have in the long run, Craig?
Well, there you touched upon it. That's one part. It would destroy the banks. Why is that? Because the banks are largely the creditors, right? Mm-hmm. This is the problem I have with the debt jubilee idea, and why I don't think it's a realistic. I mean, it sounds good, especially if you are a debtor, right? To just walk away from your debt. Mm-hmm. That happens on, you know, smaller levels. People, you know, personally, and businesses go out of business and all that kind of stuff as well. But here's, you know, here's the problem. In the current system, debt is considered an asset, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the dollar bill is an instrument of debt. But anyway, your debt is an asset on somebody's balance sheet. So it is a debt for you. It's on that side of the ledger for you, mm-hmm. but on the bank side or anybody else's side, it's a credit. Okay. It's like, if I loan you $1,000, Carrie, at 10%, and you pay me $100 a couple times, and then just walk away, I'm not getting back, you know, the $1,000. I mean, it's just gone. Yeah. And so the debt jubilee assumes that the creditors are going to be okay with that.
I'm okay with it. Let's just do it.
Yeah, you're fine with it, right?
Hey, screw them.
But this idea of just wiping the slate clean is extraordinarily deflationary, because those assets have just disappeared. Mm-hmm. And that would be, it would probably have to come with some reset. But again, like I said, I don't think the creditors go for that. It's like, what does China still own of U.S. treasuries? Let's just call it $1 trillion worth. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, they expect, you know, that they're going to get their $1 trillion for that. So, you know, the principal of those treasuries, if the U.S. were just to say, hey, fondue, we're just sorry. Well, the Chinese aren't going to go, okay.
Yeah, well, that will be the end of the U.S. dollar as we know it.
But yeah.
So
that's not a good example, because, of course, the U.S. can just print $1 trillion and pay mm-hmm. off the Chinese. But from a private creditor to a private debtor, it just doesn't work that way. So, I mean, I always see this stuff about debt jubilee, and people that talk about it are way smarter than I am. So I'm not going to presume to think that what I'm saying is correct, but I just, as I look at it, I just don't see how it works. At least certainly doesn't work peacefully.
I agree. But when you get down to it, there might not be a choice. Bankruptcy and a jubilee are really one and the same. It's just that the jubilee is administered by a bankruptcy court. There's just too much debt. It's unsustainable. But that will, one other thing, it will also destroy the currency, because every dollar that exists has been borrowed into existence. We could go through this. We've been through it many times.
Exactly. But, which, at the end of the day, Carrie, I mean, we began this conversation talking about gold and the mm-hmm. banks and smashing it down from the 50-day moving average and all this other stuff. That's, frankly, it's just noise.
Yeah.
I mean, it's frustrating as hell, right?
Yep.
And I'm in this to try to change the pricing system because it's so radically unfair and fraudulent the way that we price precious metal. And so I'm in it for the, you know, that kind of long game.
Same here.
But this day-to-day stuff, it doesn't matter.
It's a distraction.
And if anybody listening to us doesn't sit there and go, huh, let's see, all these other creditor nations like the Chinese and the Russians and the like, they're all taking some of their dollars that they hold in reserve and converting it to gold. Maybe I should take some of my dollars that I hold in reserve in savings account and mutual funds and stuff, and I should convert some of it to gold too.
You think?
That's what people need to be doing because in that long game, that's one of the few winning moves that I can foresee for people.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. Hey, you got to take a look at Craig's site. If you haven't already, I urge you to do it. It will be well worth your while. TFMetalsReport.com. Sign up for his newsletter. Check out the weekly podcast. So sign up for our newsletter too while you're at it. FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com. We got really good articles, good things coming out in the pipeline that will help you to navigate these somewhat rough and turbulent times. And anything you heard in the show that you want to talk about, kl@kerrylutz.com is the email address. Twitter feed @kerrylutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Craig, always a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much.
All the best, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.